And up next on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it's Bathrop Spears broadsides the May 15th, 2022 edition. And it's going to be a real short contemporary segment for a combination of health and who knows what, maybe lack of interest reasons on my part. Yeah, so the time will be filled up instead with two flashbacks, both to 2007, one to April 26th and the other to October 18th. And I'll be describing them in more detail if, well, right before we begin them, which should be in about 45 minutes if you listen to the whole of, maybe a little longer, the interview, and which is going to take up the contemporary section of this show with activist Becky Johnson in Seaside. And she kind of talks about a variety of topics. And then you're going to hear stuff from the Dusty Archives. I think, frankly, of interest. But again, I would naturally be interested in this stuff because I get to hear myself, of course, going on and on. But also numerous other people. And you've got to remember, of course, in these days of olden times, the only number that's any good anymore is the HUF line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, 831-423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is also my home phone, if you get a hold of me. You can't text. You have to do landline talk. And you can also reach me at rnorse3@hotmail.com. That's R, N-O-R-S-E, and the number 3 at hotmail.com. And again, as I said, I'll be giving you more of a description of these shows right before they come on. Many of these shows are not only archived currently on the HUF website, but they're also described in some detail. These two shows are not described, except that having done them as flashbacks, that gave me an excuse and a good reason to some extent, summarize what's on them, so their descriptions get added to the long roster of shows in the past, if anybody ever wants to go there. So let's begin, and remember, don't put off until tomorrow what you want to do today, because we may all be blown away by that time. But in the meantime, act to some extent as though your life depended on it, in terms of somehow getting the word through to the rest of the people to stop the insane politicians before they visit their insanity on us.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't.
I'm on the line with Becky Johnson, and it's the 14th of May, the kind of late afternoon. Hi, Becky. Any news from your neck of the woods around homeless issues or any of the other issues that you've been following that you think we might be interested in?
Well, apparently it's just misery on top of tragedy down here for the homeless. The continued plight of the sheltered homeless that are in the Project Home Keep program, which is, you know, funded by Gavin Newsom and the state.
Right.
That program is just having some attrition of the worst kind. There was a woman who was in the program last week, and she's quite disabled. She's in a wheelchair. And she was with her caregiver, and she started coughing, and she just had this uncontrollable coughing. It was just, you know, she couldn't do anything about it. And the caregiver kind of freaked out this guy, and he says, "I'm out of here." And he left her, and then she was found dead shortly thereafter.
Do we know what she died of? Do we know what caused the death?
No, I haven't heard a coroner's report or cause of death on that. But sometimes if you get that uncontrollable coughing, there might be, you know, a blood clot somewhere forming, or some sort of, fluid going into the lungs.
Bummer.
It shouldn't be. I don't know. I'll let you know if I hear any more on that. And then yesterday there was an attempted suicide also at the same hotel.
How many people does the hotel service in this Home Key program?
I heard at one point that they had 93 people in the program.
And that's from what area of the community?
Well, that's pretty much all of Monterey County, or at least the northern part of Monterey County. The southern part of Monterey County is very rural.
Well, I think you mentioned that your friend Wildfire was she a part of that program or not?
She's actually grandfathered under a previous program.
That's right. Yeah. I remember.
86th by the Monterey County, but basically, because of maximum pressure put on them by the homeless union, they have been kind of pressured into continuing to support the people that are in that program, and that's where Wildfire is.
And how many people are in that program?
Well, that's not known, but I think it's somewhere around 20.
Have you visited any of these folks? I mean, is there anything like a community in either the Home Key group or into the in the program that Wildfire is in?
I have. I'm a little concerned about some of the aspects of the Project Home Key program, like, say, a 10 p.m. curfew, prohibition on having friends over, people getting demerits if they mix with each other too much or go into each other's rooms. And to me, that seems like innocent activity that would tend to build communities and supportive relationships.
Well, you can't trust these homeless people. You don't seem to understand that, Becky.
Well, anytime a human being has some privacy, they might do something in that private space that might be questionable.
Indeed. I mean, why take chances?
It's almost like we have this phobia about allowing homeless people to have any privacy, because we're so sure that they're going to just shoot up heroin, or, if they're living in their van, then, of course, you know, they're going to make child porn videos in their van, or I don't know, just like people's imaginations run wild.
Well, but isn't it a fact that 99% of homeless people are either drug addicts, lazy, mentally ill, or simply drunkards? I mean, isn't that why they became homeless?
Well, I have not looked at the recent stats on that, but generally it's been true that a minority of homeless people suffer from some kind of substance abuse issue, with either alcohol or drugs. The incidence of alcoholism and drug addicts among the people who are newly homeless, so they just got kicked out of their housing yesterday or something, is going to be pretty much the same rate as alcoholism housing in the house population. However, after a person's been on the street for 3 or 4 months and the cold, harsh reality of life on the street sets in, the depression, the isolation, and the physical pain, the incidence of alcohol and drug abuse does go up dramatically, actually. But it never rises more than about 30%. So the average homeless person, you know, two-thirds of them have no substance abuse issue. And a lot of these substance abuse issues, if the person gets back into housing, they go away very quickly, or treatment. They readily adapt to treatment.
Do you have any stats on that, or are you talking
not
for
recently? Now, that was more delving in for the, you know, the Homeless Services Center in Santa Cruz had that survey that they would do every year. I don't know if they're doing that anymore, but they'd have about 50 questions and ask about 100 or more homeless people to fill out the questionnaires. And so that's where I got a lot of this data from, about, you know, their substance abuse, about their employment, that sort of thing. And one of the stats, you mentioned lazy, one of the stats we uncovered was that only 5% of homeless people are able-bodied and not working or not looking for work.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that I was reciting stereotypes rather than my opinions, lest some unaware. Yes. Well, you know, I'm pretty good at that, but I was afraid I might be fooling the unalerted audience, and I don't want that to happen.
You didn't want anyone to think this was the first time you heard my little rap.
Well, no, you know, I think your rap is apropos, particularly since people can only get into programs often if they characterize themselves as either mentally ill, disabled, or having a substance abuse problem.
Yeah.
So you can't just say, you know, I was fired
you
from
shelter. That's not enough. You have to have something else wrong with you to get.
I mean, you
all
can't.
The funding streams are connected.
Exactly, and you can't claim. You can't. That's true.
Disability.
That's true, and you can't claim that you lost your house in the mortgage scam, or you lost your job because it was sent overseas, because that doesn't quite cut it, if you know what I mean.
Well, if your house burnt down in a fire, you might get some help.
No, that's true, for a while, that is. Although, I think there were still people in Santa Cruz as of 8 or 9 months ago who are still living in the large encampment right in front of the Housing Matters program and sign, which bragged about how many people they'd put into housing. And again, I've never seen any good stats on that, in terms of how many people the Santa Cruz program has actually housed. So it's and a lot of those folks from that encampment came from the from fire zones, which we were in Santa Cruz pretty much lucky to avoid generally.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people did emigrate into here after that.
Most of the homeowners had, you know, insurance, but the renters, you know, they got burned out and they don't get anything for that.
Yeah, it's
maybe some relocation money temporarily. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned when I got to you this afternoon on the phone that you had a kind of a gathering happening in your house. Other homeless activists seem to be gathering at your place. Are you forming a new, more vibrant chapter of the California Homeless Union, perhaps?
Well, that may be overstating it. Empire is getting a little out there, more outspoken, more public speaking, more advocacy for other people in the program, and more YouTube activity. And then Wes has been doing a lot of work with the sheriff's race here in Monterey County, and he's been going to all the forums and videotaping the sheriff's, the candidate forums for sheriff. Mm-hmm. And he supports Tina Nieto for sheriff.
What's she got?
She's the only, in Monterey County, it seems like the sheriff is really the one who makes decisions about how homeless policies are enacted.
Mm-hmm.
And
what makes him think, or you think, that she's likely to be any different than the current regime?
That's a good question.
Do you have a good answer?
I can just tell you what he... And that is that she's the only candidate in the race some empathy for the situation homeless people are in. He said the other three candidates, forget it. They're just throw the book at them, throw them in jail, drive them out kind of mentality.
What is her background? I mean, is she a public defender, an activist, or is she some sort of under-sheriff who's bucking for a better position in the department?
I don't know that, Robert, but I just got my ballot the other day, and so I was going to be doing a dive on that to learn all that before I vote. But
I understand you have Wes White, the very man who's been going to these forums, actually in your house at the moment. Is that accurate?
He is.
I mean, he is. Perhaps even in the next room, could that be?
He could be. I don't know. I didn't want to do an
ambush interview of poor Wes.
Ambush interview, yeah.
Well, why don't I hold this for a moment and you invite him if he wants to speak, and if he prefers to continue some drunken revelry instead, we'll let that pass with only brief mention.
Why don't you press pause on your recording?
I will do. Well,
where is the path that points to a new day? Saluting the redness of the rising sun. There are no paths. Their maps are out of date. Instead of fields of ripening corn, barbed wire and a locked gate. There is no way back, no way down to the river. We must go on. The footpaths have gone. Throw the maps away. And still they pursue me, they give me no rest. Wagging their pendulum fingers, it's always the same. Counting and counting and counting in strict time. Is it some sort of game? Is it some sort of test? They give me no rest. Is it for me that they count of the children who play in the park? Or perhaps for the red, red poppies that shine in the dark? Hide your eyes, I say, and race away to a new hiding place. The count continues.
Grow tall, they hide the light, they shroud the sun, and we stay small, and in our eyes the pain recedes, the passion dies, the face we knew, the smile we loved, the hands we touched when time was new, are nowhere seen, the branching years have come between. We sowed a wild garden, there we drowned in summer perfume sweetening the air. We made time drunk with dreams and scattered seeds of brightness everywhere. Love will change the world, and love will never change. We believed we believed. The years grow tall, they hide the light, they shroud the sun, and we stay small. And in our eyes the pain recedes, the passion dies, the face we knew, the smile we loved, the hands we touched when time was new, are nowhere seen, the branching years have come between. Now in my marble garden, silence grows and spider shadows gather everywhere. Still in the distance, see the spark that burns, the darkness from the air. Soon will come the day when love will overcome. We believed, we believed. The years grow tall, they hide the light, they shroud the sun, and we stay small. And in our eyes the pain recedes, the passion dies, the face we knew, the smile we loved, the hands we touched when time was new, are nowhere seen, the branching years have come between.
And those were two songs from Leon Russellson's album, I Didn't Mean It. The titles were Still They Pursue Me and The Years Grow Tall. More to come, but back to Becky Johnson's analysis, and we'll see what happens. Or rather, we'll hear what happens. Well, apparently Wes is otherwise occupied, so we can't really get into...
And yeah, he's in the middle of his editing suite and can't really do a... I asked him if he wanted to give an endorsement for Tina Nieto, and he says he's not really prepared to do that right now, but he does... Before Canada, he still can support her.
Right, and it sounds like, of course, for the folks who don't know, and that's probably very few who regularly listen to this show, Wes has a video channel that he uses and does a lot of posting, and I'm really glad he is editing, because in doing that, he not only has the determination to go to all these events, including events in Santa Cruz, particularly homeless events, sometimes not particularly productive homeless events, but he comes anyway and attempts to document them. But he actually gets the work in the lab done, which is, of course, just as important as actually going out there and doing it. So you can thank him for me. I think I usually do after excoriating him for wasting his time on politics. You know, but, you know, that's his choice. And
this is a lot of material. And, you know, he gets up, he drives out, and these forums, they hate to see him show up, sets up his tripod, ruins their whole day, videotaping everything they're doing, and, you know, there have been times where they'll go, why did you come to that meeting, you know, we didn't do anything, and we go, yeah, you would have if I hadn't come,
What about the court case he faces? Any news on that?
I think he and Sasha are the only ones right now that are going forward to trial.
And this of course has to do with his it's two different events, but he was documenting the resistance of the Pajaro River Homeless Union to the destruction of encampments with no place to go. That was back last November or something. And I guess Sasha was simply trying to get into her trailer And she was assaulted by cops and then, of course, charged.
She's found by two cops. And she's a disabled woman. She was with a walker. And she's just going up the steps into her own rig, and they pulled her down, tackled her down, and handcuffed her, and pulled her off for trespassing, which was a weird charge, because everybody there was trespassing at that point.
And we're talking, of course, about the folks who had been in the parking lot in front of the supervisor's offices that she had made available for them to park their vehicles for a while, and then...
Well, the sheriff had come around at about 8:30 or so, and with the loudspeaker, and announced that they were in unlawful assembly, and that they needed to leave, or they would be arrested, and all that. So, you know, but at that point, people, there were about 40 people, and they were all scurrying around, packing up their rigs and stuff, and getting ready to go. And the cops let, I think, all but two people go. Sasha, they just pulled her early on, mainly because she was so vocal in her opposition. And we figure that she was planning on going inside her rig and then locking it and not coming out. And they can't pull a rig with a person in it. We think that that was what her plan was, and they didn't want her to be able to do that.
Now, were you?
That's our theory.
Were you present when this was happening, or
yes.
Is this a secondhand account?
Yes, and I got some pretty good video of it too.
And she's, and what is she facing, a charge of trespass?
I believe so.
And she's, it's been, this is many months later. Is there some reason that she didn't demand a speedy trial?
We had a lot of trouble following her case in the beginning because we couldn't find her last name. And it took quite a while, so we missed a bunch of those early hearings and stuff. And now Wes is on top of it. And now the other three people that also got arrested...
At the Pajaro River area, yeah.
Yeah, those three are pretty much just going to plead, is what I heard.
And what about Wes? Do we know what...
They were doing actual civil disobedience resistance, so, you know... They fully expected to be arrested, but Wes getting arrested was just them being, you know, dicks. He was just doing his job of videotaping.
Does he have a court date coming up?
I think it's in June. I'm not sure exactly.
I gotcha. Well, perhaps when we get...
I can send you the court date later.
Okay.
So let your audience know about it.
Now, you yourself have kept pretty active on Twitter and Instagram and even your old blog. I guess you haven't put much there for about 8 years. But if people want to get some historical sense of how things were going down in Santa Cruz around the time of the Occupy movement and before that, the year before the Peace Camp 2010 movement, where homeless people were protesting the behavior of the courts toward Blind Bear Robert Facer. You've done a lot of documentation, or did around that time. Have you been doing other documentation recently? And if so, on what media and what issues have you been covering?
Well, let's see. I got banned on Twitter, permanently suspended, in January of 2021.
Your crime?
The crime, platform manipulation.
And what does that mean?
I have no idea.
Huh.
I guess it means whatever they say it means.
I mean, what kind of posts were you making that caused them this kind of alarm?
Oh, that I remember.
Well, tell me.
I had, let's see, so this was January 24th So January 22nd and 23rd, I was posting headlines from all over, from newspapers all over the world that were saying that they had rolled out their vaccination program, their mass vaccination program, and frontline workers and nursing homes. And they were recording that a whole bunch of people were just dying all at once. Like, 26 people died in Norway in a nursing home within 3 days of giving the vaccine. And so I was posting these headlines from these newspapers, and then my account got taken down.
So you were posting the scare headlines of the conspiracy theorists.
I was causing vaccine hesitancy, because if people saw that when you took the vaccine you could just drop dead, they might not want to take it. Go figure.
Now, you yourself are an unvaccinated woman?
That would be a likely guess. Shall I not say it overtly? Because I also believe in medical privacy.
That's up to you. You have that choice. I won't be angry with you either way.
As a principle. I had COVID in February.
Indeed, we talked about it at some length.
Mm-hmm. And it was pretty rough.
How do you know you had COVID? Did you actually have a test?
Yeah, I took one of the rapid tests.
Huh.
A little 15-minute saliva rapid test.
One of the take-home tests?
No, I guess it was a nostril one. Yeah, it was a take-home test.
Uh-huh. And you haven't had any lingering effects, I hope?
No. I'm good to go now.
Hmm.
I have a neuropathy in my feet, and it greatly exacerbated the neuropathy for about a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of scary because I really wasn't able to walk for 4 days. So,
has there been any accounts
in this world for a little while there?
Mm-hmm. Have there been any accounts of COVID recently among the house key group that you mentioned of 80, or I think it was 60 or 80, or wildfires group at the place she's in?
COVID out there at the...
Now, by COVID, let me clarify. I don't mean COVID testing positive. I mean people being actually getting sick.
I'm not sure about that. People are getting sick there a lot. I mean, from all kinds of things.
At both those places?
Heart disease and breathing difficulties.
At both those places?
Yeah, there's just... Wildfire says that there's an ambulance coming out every other day.
Hmm.
And the cops are there every day, she said, mm-hmm. for someone or something.
Now, are these two places, are they both the Home Key Group and the Wildfires places, equally restrictive? You mentioned some of the...
No, she doesn't have her 10 p.m. curfew. She can have visitors in her room, but she has to limit that. Oh, is he under the program? Okay, so you can all have your caregiver in your room?
And then we have to go to the front and sign up any guests that are coming over now.
Oh, now if she has any guests, she has to sign them in at the front. But at least she can have guests.
Uh-huh. Now, is the tenancy of the folks at Wildfire's place and at Room Key fairly stable, or is it likely to be discontinued at any time?
It's the same group of people. There's not a lot of in out new people coming in or old people leaving, and Unfortunately, I haven't really heard of people getting housing particularly.
There's a big to-do in Santa Cruz City Council, or a lot of verbal attention given to the pathway to housing, similar to the fictions put out by the Housing Matters 115 Coral Street complex, previously known as the Homeless Services Center, that they're working on a pathway to housing.
I really think that just the motels is...
Well, what I'm saying is,
it's not permanent housing, but
let me ask you.
Doors, and they have a key door they can lock,
what
usually a microwave and
What I'm asking you is whether, and I hear you, and I agree that's certainly a step up. That's not the issue. The issue is, I guess, one of the things that's being heralded here in Santa Cruz is people being given a pathway to housing in whatever programs they're being gotten into. And I assume that Home Key and Wildfires Place is a program because there are all these restrictions, and it sounds like you have to agree to them to be in it. I could be wrong. I mean, you can certainly correct me if I am. And I'm wondering if there are...
It's a fairly long application that people have to fill out.
Right. My question, again, is I haven't quite reached it yet, but it is there social service outreach to folks who are in these programs to supposedly help them, A, get jobs, B, get medical help, and C, get housing? In a moment, but first, music.
Susie bites policemen. If she can, she will select a sergeant or a chief inspector. Oh, she's choosy. They all know Susie. Down at the station, when they hear she's on the prowl, there's consternation, as they know that when Susie sinks her teeth into their uniforms and flesh, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. It's as if it is her mission to bite policemen. It's not so much the wounds the coppers mind as the affront to their position. The psychiatrist's report laid stress on how distraught her parents were and how respectably she'd been brought up. You're not a criminal, not wicked, just confused, he said, and laid a hand upon her arm and took a look inside her head. We are your friends, and I assure you that we understand you better than you understand yourself, and with your cooperation we can cure you. Susie looks around as if for somewhere she can hide. I enjoy a good bite, she says defiantly. Of course you do, he says, and writes it down. And that's exactly what, if you'll cooperate, we mean to cure when we've succeeded in uncovering just what you do it for. We are your friends. You can speak openly. But of course, to allow you to go round taking bites out of members of the force could lead to anarchy. Susie looks around, but there is nowhere she can hide. It's the uniform, she says, does something to me. And again he notes it down as he probes further in her brain and is suddenly surprised to find his eyes have taken in how perfectly her teeth are formed and how she'd look quite pretty if she smiled and how her eyes are green. Then he explains as to a child that without the uniform they couldn't do their job. That's what I mean, she says, that's what I mean. And in her head, a child screams. And in her head, a spider spreads its threads like worms to catch and cobweb all her waking dreams. Come along now, Susie, give a smile for Daddy. You could look so pretty if you only tried. Won't you make me happy when you grow up to be Daddy's lovely lady, every man's dream bride? Susie bites policemen. If she can, she will select a sergeant or a chief inspector. Oh, she's choosing. They all know Susie down at the station. When they hear she's on the prowl, there's consternation, 'cause they know that when Susie sinks her teeth into their uniforms and flesh, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. It's as if it is her mission to bite policemen. It's not so much the wounds the coppers mind as the affront to their position. Susie watches from behind a screen, which means her mind is out of reach of the man whose brain is trained to find out and whose reason is as sharp as a dissecting knife to slice away the core of craziness and lead her back to life for your own good. Please believe me, if you persist in being obstinate, you'll leave us with no choice but to have you locked away, and that would grieve me. Susie, in her hiding place, keeps silent as a stone. And then she hears him say, what will become of you? His dream is to wake her from her dream. And so he tells her that these pills are what the treatment now requires to help her exercise control over her fears and her desires for your own good. You need society, for when we're trapped in our fantasies, we may think we can fly instead of learning to adapt to the reality. Susie, in her hiding place, holds silence like a stone as she sees his shadow grow to tower over her. And still he tries to break the spell, and still the words flow on as she sees him rise to giant size between her and the sun. And when he reaches out to steal her soul, she sinks her perfect teeth into his arm. How can he ever know she doesn't mean him any harm? As in her eyes he dwindles down to baby size. She won't let go, he yells, she won't let go. Still in her head a child screams, and in her head the spider spreads its threads like words to catch and cobweb all her waking dreams. Now you've made me angry, no one loves you, Susie. When you're being moody, when you're being wild, who would want to marry someone who's so surly? I don't know what will become of such a child. Susie bites policemen. If she can, she will select a sergeant or a chief inspector. Oh, she's choosing. They all know Susie down at the station. When they hear she's on the prowl, there's consternation, 'cause they know that when Susie sinks her teeth into their uniforms and flesh, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. She won't let go, she won't let go. It's as if it is her mission to bite policemen. It's not so much the wounds the coppers mind as the affront to their position.
And that one was called Susie, and it was from the Leon Russellson album I Didn't Mean It. Back to our dialogue with Becky Johnson.
But it is there social service outreach to folks who are in these programs to supposedly help them, A, get jobs, B, get medical help, and C, get housing?
I believe that they are connected with a social worker who is trying to get them in touch with that sort of thing. I know Wildfire had a social worker who was just great, was doing all this stuff for her and everything, and then they transfer her to somebody else, and now the person she has is just
deplorable.
Not doing anything. They dropped the ball.
Deplorable, to use Hillary Clinton's word, perhaps?
Well, she's at the point where she needs help applying for Social Security disability. And she's already been turned down twice, which is ridiculous. She really needs the clout of the county health department behind her to really get that, to get those benefits for her. Mm-hmm. And they just dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They were helping her, and then they just dropped the ball. And, she's not really equipped to get it by herself, minus a lawyer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, the groups, the various kinds of protests that have happened, some of which we talked about people getting arrested for and indeed going to court for, some pleading for, some still fighting it. We talked about that a moment ago. There have been activists in the community who have come out of Monterey, out of Salinas, to try to, if not engage in solidarity with people who are being threatened to have their tents destroyed and their property taken, but also at least to document what they're doing. Have you had much connection with these groups, and how are they doing in your neck of the woods, if you have?
Well, let's see. They did a sweep behind the Crossroads Shopping Center in Carmel.
Right.
Last week, I think it was, and Wes went down there with a U-Haul to help people save their stuff,
mm-hmm.
which was, I think, going the extra mile, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
And this was about 15 people, he said, and they'd been down by the river for kind of a long time,
mm-hmm.
like years they had lived there, and then they all got moved out. They all got noticed on Mother's Day. That the sweep was going to come on Mother's Day,
mm-hmm.
and then it actually came at 6 a.m. the next morning.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what happened there? I never heard the outcome of that sweep.
They came through and they moved everyone out, and everybody scattered.
We don't know where they didn't go. They didn't move as a community. And then jumping up to the Pajaro River, if you heard anything new about Monica Tone, who I heard had been recovering from COVID herself, but and then getting further harassment once she returned to her river area. But I haven't heard much, and I guess the last time I talked to Wes, he hadn't heard much either. Anything new?
I haven't heard anything new about Monica. I did hear she had COVID. That was the last I heard.
I gotcha. I've tried to call her, and I don't get any response. I don't quite remember if it was messages not returned or busy or machine full, but it's been, hasn't worked.
Well, Robert, let's wrap this up here.
Okay, because I could go on for quite a while.
You are very talented at that, and radio is the perfect format for you, although I think you should go to YouTube as well.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That's just me.
But you were going to give me some updates on Canada, and I guess there was some U.S. Truckers' opposition to vaccine mandates and such. Anything new on that?
There's a big kerfuffle about the emergency use authorization that Trudeau got to get rid of the Emergencies Act that he invoked for the first time ever in Canadian history, because he needed, you know, all of the special powers to seize trucks and bank accounts, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What he did.
Are they still seized? Are they still in the possession of the government?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think they've refunded anything. Mm-hmm. Well, a couple things. One was that the reason that GoFundMe stopped delivering the funds to the truckers
mm-hmm.
was because the Ottawa police had called up and said that it was an occupation and not a protest.
Hmm.
And then it went to court, and the judge says, no, it was a protest.
And what difference would that make?
Well, the whole reason that GoFundMe basically stopped them from getting $10 million of donations was because they were committing a crime, the crime of creating an occupation. But the court said after the fact, after they'd all been disbanded and property seized and people arrested, they say, oh, no, it wasn't illegal after all.
And so
you took all your $10 million.
So the $10 million was returned?
The $10 million was returned to the people who bought it. And that was kind of funny, too, because GoFundMe initially said that anyone who wanted to get their money back would have to apply to get it back, and that if they didn't get it, if they didn't apply within a fairly short period of time, I think it was 3 weeks, that they were going to donate the money to another fund, another worthy fund of their choosing.
I see.
And there was a hue and cry about that, but that's not really what happened. Really, what happened was in the Twitter world, people said, oh, everybody, you know, make sure you apply for the refund, you know, so you get the money back. And then somebody else said, no, don't do that. Go to your bank and say you challenge the funds. Because, you know, you dispute it, right? Because they said that they were going to give it to the truckers, and now they're not. So You have a legitimate dispute. And then you'll get your money back, but they'll also get charged $15 every time.
And how did that work?
And people started going, oh, yeah. And they all started going to their bank. And the next day, GoFundMe says, oh, we're going to just refund all the money. You don't have to apply.
But it did effectively stop the truckers from getting the money.
Well, and then GiveSend, let's see, what's the other one? The GoFundMe and GiveSendGo.
Okay.
That's the Christian one.
Uh-huh.
And so then they started raising money with GiveSendGo, and then the Trudeau government declared all those donations illegal. But then GiveSendGo says, we don't give a shit because we're an American company and we don't listen to what Trudeau said.
Now, did
they say, oh, well, we're going to seize all the bank accounts, the Canadian bank accounts. They did seize a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the GiveSendGo says, we're going to get that money to you one way or another. So they were finding inventive ways of funneling that money to the truckers.
Is there any residue of a protest either in the United States or in Canada on that topic?
I keep hearing about protests in British Columbia and Calgary.
Okay. Anything specific, or are you too exhausted to tell me anymore?
Yeah. Well, I haven't been following it quite as closely, but a lot of it seems to revolve around all these people that got fined and had their businesses closed. closed and stuff, and they're going to court seeking retribution for that or justice.
Restitution.
Some of that. Mm-hmm. And there are some leftover restrictions in Canada. Trudeau just doesn't want to let go of the pandemic. You know, he wants everyone wearing masks. There's still a vaccine mandate, even though the vaccines, the mass vaccination program has been an utter failure. Anyone who's at all honest has to admit that. You know, I mean, Bill Gates got COVID this week. Kamala Harris got it last week. Hillary Clinton got COVID. You know, I mean, these are people who are vaxxed and boosted, and it just, the vaccine does not work on the Omicron variant. And even worse, they're finding that fully vaccinated people who have then got COVID, even though they were fully vaccinated, they got COVID, that only 40% of them developed natural immunity from that.
You mean as distinguished from those who didn't get vaccinated and are more likely?
People who didn't get vaccinated and they got COVID, 93% developed long-lasting, durable immunity.
And your stat is from, do you remember where?
Yeah, it was the Moderna test data that we got from Freedom of Information.
And finally,
they knew it, but they weren't letting us know it when they were selling their product.
Of course. Is there much anti-war activity happening in Monterey County around Ukraine, or is it bric-a-brac, a firecracker, rah, rah, rah?
You know, I only heard of one demo at Window on the Bay, and Wes went down, and it was about 20 people, and they seemed very confused.
Mm-hmm.
They were anti-war but pro-Ukraine, and I don't know. It was like, how can you be anti-war and you want to funnel all these weapons to Ukraine?
Because you want to do the right thing.
So, and I personally don't know who to believe in that conflict.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I just don't know who to trust with that. The whole thing seems like a distraction from the utter failure of the pandemic policies and that crashed our economy and ruined the health of so many Americans. And to what end? And we had the highest death rate from COVID of any industrialized country in the world. So whatever we did was hell of a wrong, you know?
Well, I guess you aren't having a problem with the 40, I guess it's 40 million or is it 40 billion? I'm not sure. It's a lot of bucks going to the Ukraine rather than, let's say, into COVID-ish type prevention or anything.
Well, of course, that $40 billion, was that twice as much as we need to house every homeless person in the United States?
Something like that, yeah. That's at least the claim of Keith McHenry, I believe.
Yeah, it'd be good to do some 2022 number crunching on that. But, you know, you could pretty well figure out how much costs a motel room costs for a year, and then multiply that number times how many homeless people there are. You'll come up with a big number, but it's not going to be that big.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time beyond the time to talk to me, and I would continue to lure you further, but I don't think that's fair, so I'm going to let you go. Although I would, you know, I am here interested in how support groups around homeless activists who came out to help with the various protests in the last year or two, whether they're still involved. And if you have any information on that, perhaps we can get into that next time. I think Wes might be the person to talk to, too. But
yeah, he would know more than I am.
But I am actually asking you because you have a different, somewhat different...
I can't answer the phone. Yeah,
you A, you answer the phone, and B, you have a different perspective, too. You
know? Yeah, I do.
All right, well, listen, thank you.
Thank you so much for everything you do and for keeping these radio shows on the air. I don't even think it's on the air anymore, right?
It's on the net, and it's archived. It's not... But that is what it is, and for keeping you on the line, that was quite a trick, I would say. Yeah. You still there?
Yeah, I accidentally hit my mute button.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, give Wes my best. Tell him good luck with his editing, and we'll talk at some point when he feels like it.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Becky. Bye-bye.
That bridge cannot break, that's what the expert said. High wind, bridge falls, now there's mourning for the dead. Oh well, human error, science brings the truth to light. The reward is progress and the risks are slight. And in the shadow still, I see a figure standing. Father, teacher, wise, all-knowing, stern, unbending. And in that presence still, I bow the head and kiss the rod. For this is the voice of authority, the voice of God. That ship cannot sink, that's what the experts said. Cold collision, at the bottom of the ocean lie the dead. Ah well, human error, history will not forget. And the challenge of the future must be met. And in the shadow still, I see a figure standing. Teacher, father, wise, all-seeing, stern, unbending. And in that presence still, I bow the head and kiss the rod. For this is the voice of authority, the voice of God. There'll be no war, that's what the experts said. Bombs falling, cities burning, voices calling for the dead. Ah well, human error, the price of freedom must be paid. The glory of their memories will never fade. And in the shadow still, I see a figure standing. Leader born to rule, far-seeing, stern, unbending. And in those shadows still I bow the head and kiss the rod. For this is the voice of authority, the voice of God. That drug is quite safe, that's what the experts said. Babies born blind, deformed, some born twisted, some born dead. Ah well, human error, the lesson learned will not be lost. Progress tells us, count the gains and not the cost. And in those shadows still, I see a figure standing. Wise, white-coated man of knowledge, stern, unbending. And in those shadows still, I bow the head and kiss the rod. For this is the voice of authority, the voice of God. Nuclear power is the future, that's what the experts say. We're being led like lambs to the slaughter. We're being led by the blind, the deaf and the dead. Into the rat trap and the fallout shelter. We're being led, we're being led. Into the twilight world, a world of twos. Into the crawling world of catacombs.
And Leon Rosselson, that's R-O-S-S-E-L-S-O-N, Rosselson, strikes again. That's Experts, again from the album I Didn't Mean It. So before I turn to the flashback descriptions and play those, both the flashbacks afterward and the descriptions before, I'm going to read a letter I got from Dylan Werner Christ. He's part of the ACLU. I think he's an investigator for them. It was forwarded to me by Reggie Meisler. And the reason I read it is I'm afraid there may be some nasty legislation coming up from the city council. I should say more nasty legislation. And here's what the letter reads. It's written to me, Keith McHenry, Reggie Meisler, and Rafa Sonnenfeld, all of whom have expressed some concerns about the OVO, the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, and the CSSO, the Camping Standards and Services Ordinance, both of which are the attempt to criminalize the homeless while looking like you're helping them out, in my view. That's what that's really all about. Anyway, he writes, I hope you're all doing well. I want to share a recent update from the ACLU's work on the criminalization of homelessness in Santa Cruz. As I'm sure you're all aware, the SCPD has had a Volunteers in Policing Services program since December 2018. Actually, I wasn't aware of it in terms of that particular timeline, but I was aware of it. This is the, he describes it. This program allows anti-houseless vigilantes to volunteer with the SCPD and then gives them control over how the city handles vehicular houselessness. These vigilantes respond to vehicle abatement complaints, quote-unquote, and then go out without supervision to follow up on the complaints, most often by writing a ticket. We found out about this program through interviews with houseless people who told us about how the volunteer cops ticket them cruelly and indiscriminately, target vehicles that people live in, and treat them with contempt and disdain. Many of the people we spoke with told us that addressing the volunteer cop program would be high up on their list of priorities for us to take on. Following these reports, we started propounding public records acts focused on this program. In response to one of our PRAs, public records acts, the city sent us the attached SCPD memo. It lays out the procedures for volunteer vehicle abatement. The memo details that a special unit of volunteers will do vehicle abatement on, quote, vehicles parked on city streets for more than 72 hours with multiple vehicle code violations, which frequently include recreational vehicles, trailers, camper units, SUVs, and trucks used as living units. Under the memo, volunteers do every aspect of vehicle abatement. Members of this unit monitor the department's abatement phone line, documenting complaints, and tracking the actions taken to resolve each complaint. Volunteers conduct field patrols, where these complaints will be handled by leaving warning flyers, marking tires, photographing these vehicles, and issuing citations. What is striking here is that the volunteers are the ones who receive the complaints and the ones who decide how these complaints will be enforced. The memo makes clear the city has set up a way for vigilantes to control every aspect of how hard the city goes after vehicularly housed people. Around a month ago, we raised our concerns about the volunteer cops with the city and told them we didn't think it was legal. In a meeting yesterday morning, the city told us that they were ending the program and they would only introduce it via a city ordinance. Right now, we don't know, and that's why I'm reading this to you now. I'm afraid the city ordinance could be showing up, but I have no specific information that it is. Right now, we don't know whether this is a straight victory or a strategic retreat by the city, but we'll take it. If they come back with an ordinance, we'll have to work to mobilize against it. Yesterday evening, the city produced some documents listing the tickets it gave out for 72-hour and lack of registration parking violations, two of the citations most commonly given to unhoused people. The documents, which we converted to the attached Excel spreadsheet, show that the volunteers gave out $44,000 and $44,012 in tickets in the last 14 months, the vast bulk of them to a narrow stretch of blocks where unhoused people park. If we assume the same rate of ticketing for the life of the program since December 2018, the volunteers have likely given out over $100,000 in tickets to unhoused people, many of which led to tows. And I'm not talking about fingers and toes. We're talking about vehicles and people's homes being seized and dragged away and held for ransom and generally just destroyed. Given this information, we're now weighing our next steps as we gain more information about the harm of the VIPS program. To date, with the exception of the Coastal Planning and Commission appeals, most of our work in Santa Cruz has been just investigatory or behind the scenes. Given this, I wanted to share this update with you all. We're also sharing the news with our unhoused clients and contacts. That's a letter from Dylan Werner Kreist, investigator, ACLU of Northern California, up in San Francisco. And I've yet to interview him, but I think it might be good. Maybe I will at some future time. And that pretty much wraps up the contemporary part of this particular broadcast or netcast. Coming up now is the April 26th and October 18th, 2007 flashbacks. The April 26th one begins by discussing the Arcata homeless encampment bust, then goes on to talk about a Craig Canada article. He's an activist on the, his website is called Palm Springs Bum, and he is really been a strong researcher on and advocate of medical marijuana. He had his own radio show for a while with Free Radio, and he still lives in Santa Cruz. He talks about a complaint he had against the first two clinics that opened up selling medical marijuana in Santa Cruz, Greenway and the SPCF, I think it is. That was the second club that opened. Then we discuss the LAPD searches on Skid Row being ruled unconstitutional. There's a play of some of the dialogue at the part two of Cabrillo College's forum on homelessness, a Berkeley Daily Planet article on the homeless commission up there's concern about the Mayor Bates, then Mayor Bates, public commons for everyone, with a pretty title but an actual anti-homeless impact legislation being proposed. And then finally there's more discussion of the anti-homeless Mayor Tom Bates. And that kind of pretty much sums up the April 26th two-hour show. The second two-hour show is the October 18th one, if you're not asleep by that time or getting restless and going out to do some exercise instead. There's Mayor Riley, who Emily Riley was mayor in 2007 at that time. She was a bad mayor, as most of them are, in terms of homeless issues, and particularly hypocritical because she came to power, well, this isn't really anything unusual, but it's still nonetheless hypocritical. She came to power saying she was opposed to such things as the sleeping ban, and then ended up expanding the anti-homeless legislation. We get to hear Scope It Out Scott Graham's critique and other callers commenting on the Mayor Riley interview that I did. Indeed, those are the days when mayors actually allowed interviews or gave interviews with me and Free Radio. I've tried recently to get an interview with Mayor Bruner. She has courteously declined after three requests, and that means perhaps we'll just have to interview her on the go as she walks out of her office. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's one way to do it. I've talked about setting up a coffee clatch whereby homeless folks will be invited to come and hang out in the morning at City Hall until we can buttonhole some of the people who are planning to do more sweeps, particularly the Benchland sweep in July, with no indication that there's any real housing for even the Benchlands people, much less the rest of the folks. I don't mean housing, even another campground. It's just another one of them search and destroy operations that tells people to get lost and tough luck. Although that's not, of course, how they're putting it. They're working very hard to find housing, you see, and spending lots of the $15 million they've been given by the state. I think it's the state. And then we get to hear a discussion of Riley on racial profiling and the parking lot paranoia law, which we still have. That's the law that makes it illegal to be in any of the city's public parking lots paid for with your tax dollars if you spend more than 15 minutes, and the only time you can be there at all, even if you're during that period of time, is if you're parking or retrieving a vehicle or walking through. And then we hear some memorial to one-time Huff activist and street singer Gregarious Greg. And that kind of sums up the October 18th, 2007 flashback. So check it out. If you have any questions, comments, or want to offer any support or any commentary, please give me a call at 831-423-4833, particularly if you see incidents where people are being treated like less than human beings or unjustly outside. I'd like to hear about it and talk about it. Thanks for listening.